Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Like Steven, we sell scented sweatshirts. And the Shopify customer service team helped us so much. And I would say we had questions at 3, 4 a.m. They were there.
For sure. And I think it's why they help turn browsers into buyers.
Totally.
So if you want to manufacture true crime leggings in Guatemala and sell them in Indonesia, sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/bookclub, all lowercase, today.
That's shopify.com/bookclub. shopify.com/bookclub.
Like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption, on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Celebrity Book Club.
Ring, ring.
Hi, Gramercy Tavern. This is Amy. How can I help you?
Hi, Amy. My name is Bill. I'm flying in from St. Louis tomorrow. And I have a late business dinner. There's no way you could fit me and a few of my boys in around 10.
10 p.m. Well, Bill, first, can I just say thank you so much for considering choosing Gramercy Tavern for this special night. It sounds like you guys are in for a fun time. You're going to be pretty tired and jet lagged.
Yeah, but taking out a few big ones, so my company. Yeah, I think we're going to have some fun.
Okay, so there's a lot on the line. Got it. Okay. Ooh, 10's looking really tough. Is there maybe an ideal window that you're looking for so I can root for a cancellation? Because I really want to get you in there.
Wow. Thank you, Amy. You know, people told me people in New York City were kind of mean, but you have a different air about you.
You know, I've heard that too. I'm actually not from New York City. I'm actually from the same town that you're from.
Get out of town.
No, I won't get out of our town.
How about this? Me and my guys are going to come at 10. You try to find us a table. If not, I'll be standing out there when you get off with a bouquet of roses.
Oh my God. Bob, don't get my station all soaked.
All right, Amy, I'm going to leave you, and you have my number.
Wait a minute. Something just opened up, and I don't mean a table.
I got to tell you something, Miss Amy. I'm married. I'm a married man, and I would never risk my faithful, God-fearing marriage for anything. But you seem like someone that we were just meant to be, and I might have to put my marriage on the line. I might have to get us a room at the Hyatt Union Square.
Sometimes God shows us things and has a plan for us that's outside of the plan that we originally thought that we had.
That's from my favorite book.
The Bible?
John 4:12.
And may I suggest, instead of the Union Square Hyatt, the Park Hyatt on 57th, because it is a nicer hotel.
Oh, thank you so much for this tip. I've been carrying around this Fodor's 1992 New York guide, and
the Fodor's is historically inaccurate and often leads guests astray.
Maybe you can show me around this great city that you've become very familiar with.
Extremely familiar. I'm 6 months here since I moved from our town. Okay, well, there's a lot of other calls that I have to attend to.
I like that ambitious, ambitious Amy. Mm.
Y'all got a nickname for me already.
All right, ambitious Amy. I'll see you tomorrow at 10 p.m. sharp.
Okay.
I'll be the man in the lavender tie, big wool blazer, and a 10 buck ton hat.
And smelling like Stetson. They're not their line of cologne that they put out to match their hits. It was nice talking to you, sir.
I'll be seeing you there 10 p.m. on the sharp dot of clock.
Okay, best wishes, and it was my pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you, Miss Amy of Gramercy Tavern. You have a great day.
Okay, you too now. Goodbye.
Who's that knocking at the door? It's all your friends, you filthy whore. Your husband's gone, and we've got books and a bottle of wine to kill.
It's Hollywood.
It's books.
It's gossip.
I'm shook.
It's memoirs.
It's martinis.
It's Studio 54.
It's
Celebrity Book Club.
Come read it while it's hot.
Celebrity Book Club.
Tell your secrets, we won't talk.
Celebrity Book Club.
No boys are allowed.
Celebrity Book Club.
Club. Buzz me in, I brought the Cuervo.
Michelin vibes. Hey, best friend.
Oh my God. Hey, best friend.
I'm Steven.
And turns out, I'm Lily.
And we read celebrity memoirs,
so you don't have to. So this past few weeks, we've been reading Setting the Table by Danny Meyer.
Danny Meyer, of course, restaurateur, perhaps the most famous or most influential restaurateur in the world.
And most classy restaurateur, I want to say.
Absolutely. You may know 11 Madison Park, three-star Michelin restaurant in New York. You may know
Union Square Cafe, kind of redefined the bistro.
Absolutely. New American cuisine, really at the forefront, along with Wolfgang Puck.
You may know a little place called Tabla that took spices of the East.
People probably don't know Tabla.
No, I know. I was like, what is Tabla?
That one, and that one closed too. Right.
Right, that's the one that closed because it was just like random white person, upscale Indian restaurant. Okay.
You may also know the Modern at the Museum of Modern Art.
One of the most expensive restaurants.
But you certainly know Shake Shack.
Locations everywhere. Reinventing the 1950s drive-by American roadside burger and custard.
You mean drive?
Drive-in.
Drive-in.
A drive-in.
A drive-in where you drive up and then a Kelly girl comes in a roller skates.
And she's like, hey, boys, what are we having today?
I feel like they were more like teens though and not like so busty in Mae West.
No, but now that we're talking about Mae West.
Oh, I know what you're about to say. That like that part that's like a waitress should
waitress
be like
of the
30%
year.
Mae West.
No, their waitress of the year. Okay, one of their waitresses who won like a waitress competition.
But then he dragged her for like letting it go to her head and trying to use her waitress of the year fame.
We're getting too fast, but basically this waitress at Union Square Cafe described herself as like 30% Mae West and like 70% Walter Cronkite. And that is the perfect combination of a server.
Which is so psychotic. I'm trying to understand in what context Walter Cronkite is.
Because
that
you're
you
delivering
be
the wine menu, but at the end you're just like, and you'll be living happy, darling, like on the side of his arm.
And I guess it means like, okay, so you have to have the sassy personality, but also be like trustworthy and authoritative. But it's like my chopped bib salad is not like a sobering news story. It's like, I believe that it's chopped bib salad. I don't need that delivered with someone who is just like, it's so dry.
Well, I think it's more about just like someone who has the knowledge that Walter Cronkite does of a menu.
But you know what's funny? I don't really think of the newsmen of yore as actually being that knowledgeable. To me, they were these blank delivery
these
vehicles.
These fucking sheep.
These fucking
reading from a little cue card.
Yeah, like, and their whole thing was that they weren't supposed to have emotion or really know the story.
But don't people love Walter Cronkite? And it's people just being like, we sat down at 6 p.m. every night and Father, he lit his cigar and we watched Walter Cronkite.
I mean, I think there's a lot of like Freudian whatever. People just like love this memory they have of their dad, like not loving them.
Speaking of dads, Danny Meyer has a dad.
Danny Meyer has a dad who is a... So Danny Meyer...
Oh, wait. First, you're probably wondering why we read this book.
Oh, that's a really good point to bring up. So we're
kind of obsessed with restaurants and dining out.
We're huge foodies. I grew up, I want to say, rich. And my parents took me to restaurants a lot.
And I grew up going to restaurants with Stephen's parents.
And so that's like really where our shared love of restaurants comes from.
I didn't even know Danny Meyer had a book. And then I was in McNally Jackson, a gorgeous local bookseller in Soho.
Do support your local booksellers.
And I was in the bathroom and I just picked this up and I opened to a page and he was talking about just
like... You were
like
in the bathroom?
Waiting for the bathroom.
Okay.
I would never bring an unsold book into the bathroom.
Please
with
do not
me.
Bring unsold merchandise yeah. into the bathroom. That's absolutely disgusting.
And I opened this page and he was talking about just like developing Shake Shack and having an old-timey hot dog cart and Chicago hot dogs, which are one of my favorite foods. Mm. And I was like, oh my God, this book is amazing.
Yeah, because it tells the insider backstory of how all of these iconic restaurants came to be and where the inspiration came from. And of course, his perspective on hospitalité, which I would say is perhaps like one of the biggest impacts
of our world,
of our absolute world, is his vision about not just that the customer is always
business.
Right, but
no.
how you should run a business and how you need to be anticipating guests' needs. And
it's a way of seeing it life, how to manage someone, how to manage your life, how to treat people.
How to make people feel welcome.
And happy. And how it's also not about just the customers always right. It's about how to make literally down to the dishwasher feel appreciated.
Right. And well, it's also about really sort of in many ways, you know, I think he's a fan of eliminating the status and like fear and anger that comes with hierarchies in a restaurant setting. And, you know, one thing that's very interesting about Union Square Cafe, and we'll get to this, but no bus people. The servers are the bussers.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that.
Because a lot of the time you will see a busing hierarchy, and it's often it mirrors a racial hierarchy in restaurants, where you've got these bussers who are silent, never talk, and then you've got the servers, and you're supposed to view them, you know, differently.
And you're like, oh, here's this low person picking up the plates.
Right.
I could also tell when I opened up to that page in the book, I was like, this is going to be a fun read. It's not going to be like literally just like a list of, this book is a lot of lists, but Danny Meyer loves jazz. Mm. And this reads
like jazz.
Like jazz. Actually, it's bop bop
bop. Scallops.
Smokesteak. Caesar.
Carrot crema.
Tuna. Tar. Tar. Okay, I got to get into something about tuna tartare. This is why I love Danny Meyer.
Go on.
Is because he was like,
oh, he invented
I'm not,
tuna.
Right, but he was like, I'm not going to be a cheesy hoe. Every luxury restaurant True. In the 90s was serving tuna tartare. And he's like, I'm not just going to do a tuna tartare with shaved truffles. And I was kind of like, well, don't you do that? But
there was a tuna tartare on the menu yesterday when I was at Union Square Cafe, I will say. Okay, but it was prepared in a different way. And I don't remember, but it was. It didn't like break the universe.
Right.
I will say just...
It's more his point is that just like, if he's going to do something...
Do it better or different.
Exactly.
And I feel the same way.
Oh, yeah. Don't just throw something on there because you're like, this is what people want.
So the cover of this book... So the book is called Setting the Table, The Transforming Power of Hospitality and Business. It has just a single salt shaker.
And you want to know why? There's a scene where this, you know, he's having some troubles with his restaurant. He's always kind of spiraling. And he meets with his friend, and his friend comes to Union Square Cafe. And he goes, I want you to take the tablecloth and everything off that table right now, but leave the salt shaker. And he says, where do you want to put the salt shaker? And Danny Meyer kept on rearranging it. He's like, is that where you want it to be? Like, it's 2.5 inches off, and it's moving around. And he was like, see, that's what dining out is. Everyone's always going to be moving this salt shaker, like, throughout the table. And it's, like, him going on for, like, a chapter about this, just being so, like, everyone's always going to have their opinion or something's always going to be a little bit off. But it's how you go through life and manage these mistakes.
What's kind of brilliant about this book, and one of the reasons I don't think I've ever related to one of our authors more than this book, is he is, as you say, always spiraling. He's kind of in a gay panic at all times.
Yeah, but he's not
But he's
gay.
Not actually gay. And the way that he heteroizes the gay panic and, like, ends up not having this be this unproductive spiral is that he, like, he finds a way to manage it. So gay panic is a concept that I have been at the forefront for many years. It's a philosophical concept that has not totally have a lot of academic and literature behind it.
It yet, will one day.
But it will. But essentially, it is this deep, insane insecurity that particularly afflicts gay men, where they constantly need to change their location, change their life, like change what they're doing. They're never satisfied in the moment. It's why they walk really fast.
Picture this. Stephen and I are on Newbury Street, one of the hottest streets, shopping destinations in Boston.
Right.
And I've been kind of like watching you shop. We're 17.
Right.
And we're at the Puma store, and we've already been at the Diesel store.
Right.
You're going into a spiral about denim. And you realize you have 5 minutes left till Diesel closes. And you realize, you know what? I actually need these, like, psycho jeans.
The clock is ticking. Tick.
So you...
Talk.
You,
and when you say psycho, you mean flared, sandblasted, yes. Whiskered.
They would have to be, like, washed very, like, once a month with stones, like, full Carson Kressley era jeans, like, so distressed, ripped with rocks.
There's sweat pouring down my
face. You're sobbing at this point. You're sobbing and running down Newbury Street. To get to Diesel to buy the jeans.
Because there's way too much time in Puma delivering over what shoes I wanted or track jacket or what
have you. Or gay pants, you know, lesbians, they kind of have a different like sleepy disease and other different kind of ways to spiral. But I would say, you know, a lesbian will be like, oh, I need to like go to bed. It's 12. And like a gay guy like can admit usually ever that the night is over.
No, a gay guy will go to 3, 4, even 5 locations. Like 1 a.m. their night's just starting because they still...
There always has to be something
there has
better.
To be, there's something better. The grass is always greener is maybe a simpler way of putting gay panic. But I remember another canonical example of gay panic. We were at a restaurant that I want to call Chili's in Chicago in 2008 or something.
And man, that's great. I think greater Chicago.
One of our very good friends who I think is most proto example of gay panic, Michelle.
Michelle.
Michelle Blank, shall we call her? He was like, we get there and the manager was like, oh, do you want to sit here? And they sat us at a booth. And then Michael was like, oh, wait, or should we go sit at this high top because it's more in the sun? Or wait, is the high top that if our feet are not on the floor, then we're not going to like have as much fun? or no, we should sit at a table because then we can all have a chair. And then we can all like look at a different part of the restaurant.
Mushed, and then I'll be like having to go to the bathroom. And then I'm like...
And so it's this just absolute spiraling, panicking, constant second guessing, never satisfied, always wanting to go to the next place. Gay men are always on planes. They love to travel. They want to go to Europe. They want to be in 8 different relationships concurrently.
Right, like every time you end a relationship, you go to Europe. You must go on a 3-week vacation. Yeah. I mean, that's also very specific to you and your class.
Yes.
I don't know.
But I think I've influenced a generation and I'm seeing a lot of gays do that now.
No, I saw Spike on Kayak. Sales.
Well, you have like a feed into there.
Into gay guys buying tickets. It's in my master kind of IBM. So anyway, gay panic. But anyway, so what's not gay about, I guess, Danny Meyer is that like,
here we go.
You know, he'll see the problem and be like, oh my God, like actually 11 Madison Park, like we started offering boxed lunches and they didn't work. And he was like, and like, fuck me. Now we have 3,000 like unused boxes and I ruined the earth.
Right.
And instead of just like trying a new crazy program or just like opening up 17 other restaurants, he was like, let's just like do so many like focus groups and
let's double down and figure out the problem with the restaurant. They were like, oh, no one's coming, so let's like give weird box lunches to these like Credit Suisse bankers in the building above and like
who have a cafeteria.
Which sounded very that company Maple, do you remember? That was like between like
the ads were everywhere and it was like goodbye, sad desk like lunch salad.
Yeah.
Like and you're getting a boxed like duck. With like field greens.
And like, everyone needs this like $19 boxed duck. But it was like only between just like Varick and Green and like Houston, whatever. And it like lasted for 8 months and it was completely unprofitable for everyone involved.
And they thought Advertising Alley was going to eat it up.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they did. I remember when I worked at an agency in that area. And then like for maybe 3 weeks, like a fleet of Maples would arrive like every lunch hour and like all of my like random British show office chicas would just be like, duck now. And then it was just like, but because they like fell prey to the marketing, but it's just like no one needed the duck.
Well, because they were just advertised in the way that everything is now. And but then it's like, no, you actually like don't like need duck at lunch.
So anyway, as you were saying.
Well, I think Danny Meyer, what he did is he reinvented the business lunch. a little bit with his restaurants and made it a little more fun, a little less stuffy.
So Union Square Cafe was his very first restaurant, opened in 1985. And it used to be on Union Square. Then it closed and moved. But it used to be right across from Coffee Shop next to Blue Water Grill. Remember going there in freshman year of college.
I only went there once, I remember, with you when I first moved to New York.
No way.
We got burgers.
Oh,
real big burgers.
Bloody Marys, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. Anyway,
you saw fake 80s.
We were definitely like 22. When he opened Union Square Cafe, everyone was just like sketched by Union Square.
Which is so insane.
Crazy to think about that.
I also do have to say, though, okay, so I was like, I went to Union Square Cafe yesterday and I talked to the bartender there. Mm-hmm. And he was talking about how he used to live in the East Village in the 80s.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, tough neighbor. He was like, yeah, like people say that, but it was still just like, people were living there. You could walk around. Like, yes, people were doing drugs in like Tompkins Square Park, but it wasn't like it was like so insane. You're getting knifed
crime
on every corner.
And just
and, like people always talk about New York in the 80s like that. They're just like, you couldn't.
No, Bowery, please, honey. Just like
honey, you walk 2 feet, you step on a needle. Like, it's just like you were still able to live in the city. And I'm sorry, but you can still get just like beat up on every corner in New York as
absolutely like
to.
Outside of a maple.
Right.
The way he talks about like scouting Union Square, that it was just like this crazy Gotham of like only like fabric factories. Right. And like everyone there is just like
so much steam rising out of
grates. Stabbing each other outside of delis. And then he's like, but I had a feeling. And then he gets this place. And then he does the same thing about Madison Park,
which is just like 2 blocks away.
And it, like acting like he's like, well, oh, well, his whole thing is, which I love, is that he has to live walking distance from all of his restaurants.
Love a walkable
which
city.
Which is what I do.
What, you move based on restaurant proximity? You live near no restaurants.
Awkward.
Okay.
That was kind of just like a joke about how I'm a restaurateur.
okay.
But he
popped.
Yeah. Anyway, because he can pop in and just like be personable. And then when he talks about Madison Square Park, which is like where the first Shake Shack was, you know, it's crossing the Flatiron Building.
Right.
And he was acting like it was so sketchy. I mean, maybe I guess like no one was there.
I think it was just no one was really there. And like the park was just kind of like wasn't so green. It was a little just like kind of trampled somewhat. But it's still just like, I don't know, there's like office people and like buildings. It's not that weird.
Right. But he did, I think reading this book, I feel like we both agree that I feel like he basically kind of like
Invented
Union Square, Flatiron.
Right, and the concept of gentrification.
Yeah.
And he's always just, every time he's just like, and you know, it's so important to have the neighborhood grow with you. And you move there and you get your business and other people will follow.
I mean, he put Madison Square Park on the map. He was like, and that was my thing. Like, I battled with the city and I made so many promises that I would bring this park up. And it's like, if you look at all these rom-coms from like 01, 02, they're always walking with their gals in Madison Square Park.
No. And that brings us to a very important point that I think that the Danny Meyer New York, this New York of like the casual bistro lunch of like getting wine in a setting that is like fun, but like not too expensive.
Right. It's like, it's not a $27 halibut, but you're getting a $16 salad.
And like the fact that all his restaurants were clustered between Union Square and like Flatiron and Madison Square, like, and that would be EMP, Union Square Cafe, Tabla, Shake Shack, Gramercy Tavern. Like, that defines, I think, the rom-com era of the 2000s of, like, Kate Hudson land. Like,
It's Kate Hudson. She's coming from her advertising job.
Yes.
She's meeting her friend who works at a publisher. And they're going to Union Square Cafe.
Yes. Or it's so, like, she's at a weird, like, some sort of Cipriani's restaurant or, like, some Midtown place. And then it's just like, you know what? This place is too stuffy. You want to get out of here.
You want to get out of here and go downtown. And then you see them, like, I love, like,
and then they
watching
just go to, like,
those
Gramercy
movies, like,
Tavern,
yeah, I always, like,
imagine,
like, what people mean when they're like, I want to just, like, go somewhere for, like, late night eats. And they don't mean a diner. They just mean, like, still, like, getting a big glass of red wine and, like, pasta. And you're sitting at the bar and you're like, oh, isn't it so casual here? And it's like, well, your bill's still going to be $120.
It's
so different.
Absolutely fabulous and neighborhoody. And it's giving you this sort of high quality fare. And one thing he does often in the book, he's just like, you always have to break a rule. And then he has these like very convoluted rules where he's like, who says that you can't have extremely fine French cuisine Oh. That's at a 4-star Michelin level that is served in a rustic tavern-like setting. And I'm
that
like,
was insane. It was like,
what do you mean, who's that?
He was like, classic bistro food is like pig cheek a la rouge. And he's like, who says I can't serve fancier food than like duck a la orange, like under just like this barn antique.
And it's like, I guess no one is saying that, right. But it's just like, it wasn't exactly.
I think he means he really studied in France.
Yeah.
And so they have strict rules there.
So back to his upbringing for a second.
Okay, this is where I really related to him. He was a hungry, hungry child.
He has an eating disorder.
And he's thin, too. I feel like he's a binger.
Well,
and
he literally refers to binging. I mean, he talks about how his parents kind of like chided him for gaining weight in middle school and that he would sneak down
for ham
and like unwrap like prosciutto in their kitchen and then wrap it back up carefully so the mom wouldn't notice.
Or
like
in the butcher paper, just like, and he'd be always like stealing so many slices.
And then, okay.
Well, the maid part, okay.
Okay. You mean the slave?
His slave.
The family slave. That part was so insane.
Where he just kind of pops in and he's like, our good housekeeper who came from sharecroppers.
Just, yeah, never mention. It's just like, no, she came from sharecroppers and she would cook us fried chicken.
And mac and cheese.
And she would secretly give me fried chicken. And then, like, throughout the day as she was cooking it, and then I would eat it and flush the bones down the toilet so my mom wouldn't know that I had
it. The bone flush was so obese and, like, eating. That was the most eating disorder. It's like, well, because she would see the bones in the trash and then you'd get like whipped for all your like hungry.
Or maybe daddy would spank or something. I feel like daddy was a spanker and that wasn't mentioned, but like.
Yeah, so his dad was a big drinking St. Louis hotelier.
Which is very Mae West.
Right. That part is so Mae West. And his businesses were also like that of like a throwaway 1950s like slapstick comedy. Like, couldn't you see like a movie like in 1957? He ran a business for tours through Italy for people who worked in the airline industry. And it's someone like getting in a total mix-up or something.
And it's like he was just catering to like flight attendants and pilots who were like on shore leave or whatever you get from Pan Am. And then they come to Rome and want to take like a 7-day restaurant tour. And he like charters a bus for all these flight attendants.
And he finds like all these trattorias and takes them to it. I mean, great idea. Sure. Before the internet?
Right.
Please. You needed.
Well, and this is back to that point that we're always making, I think, that it's just like before the internet, just like you could just like have like any random business.
Well, yeah, and it's like, as we were saying, and like all these business people who like, as Danny Meyer was like, oh yeah, and then I like got so rich in sales when I was 23.
Oh, he graduated like, college. I was a $1 million earner for like this random software. What was it called? Like SoftBank?
Yeah, like SoftBank. And he was like, and I was their best damn salesman on the team. And hell, I was making like, I had to take a pay cut when I worked at Union Square Cafe.
And it's just like, that was so brave of you to take that pay cut.
I mean, it's very just like classic, I think, rich kid, obviously, being like following his dreams, being like, you know what? No, I will stop making $1 million so I can open a restaurant. And that is brave of me.
And that is brave. But he was, I feel like his childhood was very mine because his parents were very just like taking him out of school for a week because they had to go to like Gestalt on vacation.
No,
just, like,
I really felt like
going
I was
to the Alps. Like, I'm sorry, Danny is going to be missing 7 days.
I really felt in the beginning that I was like reading about your family. And that's why I think I really like got in there because it was like about like so many vacations and just like they were always going to like the Belmont horse races for 7 weeks. Right. And just being like, and I went with daddy to the races every day. And then that's what I learned how to order oysters Rockefeller.
Celebrity Book Club.
So I have a passage here from one of the vacations they took as children to Europe. This book is also, I would say maybe the first third of this book is simply listing things.
Just listing restaurants. It's listing restaurants in Italy. It's listing restaurants in France.
Listing foods that they had at restaurants. Listing wines from particular vineyards that they had at different restaurants in France on their trip to Italy. Okay, so this is like part of him falling in love with the concept of food. My parents took vacations alone together at least twice a year. Oh, this is also so my parents being
Daddy and I we're going to go to France for a week and a half, and our maid will take care of you.
Okay, well, I did not grow up with a slave.
No, I would never say that.
It was more of an indentured nanny who lived in like a very small room in our house.
We have to just take one quick minute to talk about, Stephen had a host of Nannies One who ran a very early internet camming site.
Yes, I had a nanny who ran a porn site
Heather
from our
69.
House. No, her website was called Wild Child with wild. And it was like her like solo site. And she was a big girl. And she was kind of like one of, I don't know if she was one of the first big girls, but like,
I'm sure there's been big girls before her.
But she was iconic. She had a Florida ceiling Tori Amos poster. She took me to see Blue Man Group. She was friends with Marilyn Manson.
Friends with Marilyn Manson?
Yeah. She would always like call him Brian. She'd be like, Brian.
And your brother like discovered like her massive digital camera with like all of her
photos. And I never knew. I found out way later and I was totally scarred.
Were you really scarred?
No, I was just like, what? It was just so many. I was 12 at the time.
I mean, I think that's, I'm always like, did your brother hook up with her? Like,
I think it definitely defined his sexuality.
Yeah, for sure.
Because he's definitely like into that type of girl in a big
so
way.
So horny.
And he's like such a horny little freak. Okay, anyway, back to this Danny Meyer passage. My parents took vacations alone together at least twice a year, and with us in tow another three times a year. So that's
five vacations.
That's obscene. The Christmas and Easter vacations were often spent in Florida, in or around Miami, where my dad could be within striking distance of Hialeah or Gulfstream Park so that he could bet on the Daily Double, gambling addict. Every summer meant a family vacation of up to 3 weeks. We went to California when I was six, pea soup Anderson's in Solvang, and sourdough bread and abalone at Fisherman's Wharf made an indelible impression. We went to France when I was seven. Everything made an impression. The hot chocolate at breakfast, so bitter that it needed two cubes of sugar. The yeasty baguettes, the sour creme fraiche, and the salty deep yellow butter. We went to New England when I was eight. Fried Ipswich clams, lobster rolls, drawn butter, creamy clam chowder, and golden Indian pudding. What the fuck? Golden Indian pudding?
That's like a turmeric pudding, I think.
Is that a New England delicacy?
I feel like that feels very like a Native American like tradition that I don't know about.
That's a Wampanoag thing?
And I feel like what I really related of him talking about how when he would go to other people's houses, like not on vacation, that was like his other food travels, which was very me. Like, because like when you're a kid, you're always like so like shocked by like what other kids have that like your parents don't have.
Because you've like never known another world other than your parents.
Exactly. Right. So it's like he would go over and be like, you guys use a different kind of mayo. You guys use like this barbecue sauce. And he was always like being so mean, like reviewing mayos and sauces.
I always remember my mom telling my mother grew up pretty poor and in, you know, Los Angeles. And her parents were just like so 50s and like Spam only and just like canned corn.
Yeah.
And she talked about going to their neighbors, the Tangs, who served her pizza for the first time. And she was like so shocked by it.
No, my mom, she didn't have pasta till she was like 13 because she grew up in a very small town in upstate New York. Mm. And she was shocked by it. She also talks about going to my father, who grew up Italian in the Bronx, going to his parents' house for Thanksgiving. And it was like, she was like, I was so shocked. And it was so just like 800 meatballs, like before the turkey. And like, and then after we were done eating like all the meatballs and the turkey, we went over to like someone else's house for just like a salami dessert.
Okay, this next list is his first date with Audrey.
Okay, so the rom-com that is his romance with his wife. I mean, it starts out, it's...
They work at the same restaurant, and they're, like, running into each other and flirting.
And they're always, like, climbing upstairs and going to the basement and kind of, like, running into each other, and everyone's kind of talking about it at the restaurant.
This part is actually way more Anne Hathaway than Kate Hudson.
Yeah, it's less... I mean, I would even say it's, like... more 90s. It could even be just like a
yes.
Julia Roberts
movie,
not even Anne Hathaway.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, it's not working, but it's like he's a Richard Gere type and they're, or he's like a young Robert Downey Jr.
So you're saying Audrey's a prostitute.
No, okay, sorry. He's a young Robert Downey Jr. Okay. This is the made-up movie. She's Julia Roberts. Debbie Mazar is like her sassy friend.
Yes!
Who's just like, so when the hell is he going to ask you out?
She's like, it's so front of house.
It's so FOH. Oh, so before we talk about this, should I drop? So do you realize that my first ever lover worked at Gramercy Tavern?
Wait,
and that's
what?
Where she met her husband.
stop.
Yeah.
My jaw is on
the floor. And I feel like that also probably gave me my root of kind of
Joanne. Who you lost your virginity to in Chicago.
In college.
In 2006.
Yes.
Later.
Well, still 05. Anyway.
It was not fall.
Yeah, it was fall. It was Halloween. Because then the next time I had sex was the next Halloween. and I was like, oh, I'm a Halloween girl.
And that started your
girl.
Tradition of having yes. sex annually. wait, that's so insane. You beat me by so many months.
Well, I think
I'm such a fucking loser.
You've definitely surpassed.
This is gay panic.
And you, yeah. Stephen, has surpassed me by millions.
well,
okay, but like
maybe
insane
thousands.
Gossip, I think.
What? Oh, is she gonna, are they headed for Splitsville?
Well, no. I think they like, when they both were working at Gramercy Tavern, like, there was drama. Now they're, like,
wait,
happily married and have a baby.
She literally met her husband the same way Danny Meyer met his wife.
Yeah, they were... She
working
was,
at a Danny Meyer restaurant.
He was chef, like a sous, and she was in the pastry department.
Okay, women are always in the pastry department.
Well, I think that's, like, a sexism where it's, like, it's hard to get...
that is a sexism.
That is a sexism. I'll call it out when I fucking see it. like women, I think, are taught that they're like
right,
just
that,
for pies.
That they're baking
and
they're
then,
supposed to bake.
Right. Kitchen is so like, yes, chef, and you're jerking off into like,
right.
you know, a
and
rib,
it's like
a
men
rib
are
shank.
Chopping and women are like molding dough.
Right. Even though it's like women are supposed to like be cooks, but it's like more manly for like.
Right. Because like so many of the biggest pastry chefs, Christina Tosi, you know, are women.
That woman that like invented Batali's person who like invented gelato, Nancy something. Whatever. She's like a famous gelatoist.
Okay.
and see, this is where obsessed
this
with restaurateurs in Union Square.
If I may, please just read the passage about their first date.
Yeah.
Well, now we have this context of Joanne and her husband, so it's very similar to that, I'm sure. Okay. We started with drinks at the Algonquin Hotel. Barely made the curtain for noises off at the Brooke Atkinson Theater on Broadway. Took a cab down to Tribeca for dinner at the Odeon. Then perhaps the liveliest and most delicious late-night dining spot south of Canal Street. Sauntered over to Le Zinc for after dinner drinks, and walked all the way up to the West Village for more drinks and conversation at another late favorite restaurant, Texarkana. We meandered up to Audrey's apartment on 22nd Street, which was across the street from Pesca, where we listened to tapes of her singing Broadway tunes and talked until 4 in the morning. At that point, I took a cab up to my own place. I was due at work at the restaurant in just a few hours. I got just enough exuberant sleep to have the wherewithal to write a thank you card. My mother's lessons were at last paying useful life dividends, which Audrey found slipped under her door when she woke up later that
How
morning.
How completely insane is that to write like a thank you card
okay.
after a date?
But,
that's
but,
so, I mean, yeah.
That is cute.
That is absolutely
that
cute.
That is actually cute.
Who I'm would not, do, because to take the time.
Right.
And you know, he's putting his cards
what,
on
the table. Okay, but what is a little weird is that he went home and then came back to her apartment secretly to slip it under her door.
Well, this is what's so New York and Gramercy, where everyone's just like a 5-minute walk
no,
away
and it's
from
so,
each
and
other.
It's so TV show where people are meeting at 7 a.m.
Our favorite thing.
Right. But I'm just like, I don't know. I guess if someone did that to me, I would think it was the cutest thing ever, but I would also be super creepy
well,
by
yeah,
the fact
so,
that a thing was slipped under my
Yeah, that you talked later and then you're
door.
Like, when did you come by?
Like, you went home at 3, then came back at 8 to Ridgewood and put this, like, hand
Well, again,
note.
Right. Imagine if, like, you were on a date and you lived on 23rd and Madison and the guy lived on 25th and, like, Lex.
Okay, I'm obsessed.
Yeah, I know. I was just, like, hearing about that date, it's like, that is why that is the movie. Because after he leaves, the girl just is like, ah. and
no,
then, like,
no, she closes the door, leans up against the door, and then falls to the floor.
And then, like, her friends are, like, calling her, like, off the hook on her big phone.
I mean, I do that, like, often, I would say, like, in my head, but I don't. It's been a long
I'm
time.
I'm always wanting, on kind of my first dates, to kind of evoke that energy of, like, and then we went for late night drinks.
What was your first date with Maya?
Well, I do feel like it was kind
your
of.
Current girlfriend.
Yeah, kind of that. So we went. Our first, I'd say, official date, I was performing at, like, a gallery comedy show you were hosting, and she came. It was, like, an installation of a gallery, and I played, like, a chef, as usual.
Wait, that
yes.
was your first date?
So she came that, because she was, like, coming to talk hall, and we had, like, already, like, met out. And so she, like, stopped by that and was like, yeah, like, do you want to like come to me to like this drinks thing? So then like we headed into Brooklyn. We got on the F train.
Okay.
And then like went to this random drinks and I assumed all these girls were her best friends, but it was like random.
This was after you take it as like a cool fucking downtown comedy show.
Yeah. Then we got drinks in Brooklyn.
By the coolest comedians in all New York going.
Okay, and I'm just like, these are her best friends, but actually she just like, it turned out like she was like, I've never seen those girls like have her gun. It was like weird RISD camp friends. Anyway, and then we're like, okay, now we're gonna like pop into someone else's goodbye drinks. Mm. And this is where I am, Danny Meyer. So after that, and then we're like, okay, like let's go back to your house to finally go to home base. We pass by this bar. Live jazz is playing.
Okay, wait, this is fully Danny Meyer. And you ducked in.
Yeah, and we fucking ducked in.
This book should actually be called ducking in.
Yeah, duck it. And then we ducked in, got a beer, and like made out to live jazz. And then...
Fuck.
And then continue walking home. We got like totally
and her,
cheap
And her
doll.
Mouth was the trombone, and you were playing her, sweetheart.
I didn't do the note, though, the next morning. But anyway, that is, like, my ultimate thing, to, like, to come upon something, which,
my
if
first
now...
date with my boyfriend, I will say, was so not that.
Okay.
We went to Birdie's and, like, got wasted, and then went back to his tiny apartment and, like, did coke and smoked weed.
Okay.
Sorry.
So may I transition, now that we're talking about jazz, to talk about barbecue and blue smoke? And...
Oh, wait, I'm sorry. When he has his idea for, like... A website called Q. It's
that
so,
was so
pets.com in like 90s.
It was so 98. And he's like, it will be an interactive map and you can like find out where all the best barbecue places are. I mean, sounds like a cool website in 1998. But he's like, I am glad looking back that I didn't do that website. Okay, so he's like loves barbecue and like is like obviously like such a fat kid and is like this guy whatever invited me over for fucking ribs and like I've been like testing like smoke pits all over this country. So he opens this barbecue restaurant and he's like, my whole thing is that I didn't want it to seem like a theme park and just like the last thing we wanted to do was to have like so many old Coke signs. But like I've passed by Blue Smoke and it looks
it is so old Coke signs.
And I guess they got like really, I mean, it's definitely
and
like still
like,
in
like,
biz.
I don't want it to seem like a theme park. And it's like, it looks like a fucking theme park on the website.
Like, right. And it's like his...
It looks
and,
so airport.
Yeah. And then it's being sold like Blue Smoke and just like neon and like twisty things. And like everyone is like in a plaid shirt. And it's like, I don't know. I do think that he was like, it's so hard to do BBQ in New York because people...
Oh,
it's all about context.
Smoke ordinances.
Well, smoke ordinances is huge, for one. But also, people are obsessed with finding an off-the-beaten-track barbecue place, and right. that is the thrill of it.
Right.
And then going in. So, like, nothing is off-the-beaten-path about going to 23rd and Madison.
And also, like, Danny Meyer is already famous, and it's just like, we already have the celebrity thing. So
right.
Like...
And you're like, okay, so you're popping up this BBQ. You know what I want to do? Because there is a jazz club underneath.
Right.
One day, we should go to the jazz club.
Right.
And you can get fare from
that
Blue
his
Smoke.
Like cousin owned.
Yes,
whatever.
And he like bought him out or something. But then I looked and there's like a Blue Smoke at JFK.
So maybe
right, which is like yeah, that's not off the beaten path.
Maybe on our next flight to who knows Nantucket,
yeah.
Zanzibar,
Nashville, Toronto.
We'll stop at BS.
BS.
I feel
terminal
like that sounds
six.
Very JetBlue terminal.
Yeah,
sounds very T4.
And you're getting just like a $18.99 pulled pork sandwich.
And you're ordering it from an iPad because yeah. Where is service nowadays? Everything is automated.
Okay, I love the word he uses, a hospitalitarian.
Oh. okay, so Danny Meyer's restaurants, a few years ago, made quite a lot of news, quite a bit of hubbub. I've got a lot of tongues a-flapping and lips a-wagging about, tongues a-wagging and lips a-flapping about not tipping. And completely eliminating tipping from most restaurants and instead including it into the prices.
So your food is a little bit higher.
Food's more expensive, but everyone's getting tipped equally. And therefore, the poor waiters and waitresses are not dependent on the whims of,
Some
crazy rich man who either maybe had a bad day and doesn't feel like tipping.
And it's just like, I got my salad late and you poured my wine. Wait,
right.
Okay,
you know,
that
some
part...
guy has a bad day at the market and comes in and takes it out on the waitress.
One thing about wine, when there's a reviewer that comes in, he knows the guy like hates when white wine is too chilled. So Danny Meyer,
so
like,
he rubs it between his thighs.
Yeah, and then it turns out that the wine was too warm.
Yeah, and it was like all this hot thigh wine. That actually like does sound kind of good though. And I do, and I will say, I actually used to work at City Winery, which is
as an usher,
which is like a position that's like it's like a 2.5 hour job.
Yeah, it's kind of the lowest. Well, in Danny Meyer world, you're part of the ballet.
Yes,
okay,
you're absolutely part of the ballet. And
you're a flute in the orchestra.
It was a good job because I got to see shows for free.
And we saw Macy Gray.
I saw Macy Gray. I saw...
City Winery is a place that, like, it's very for, like, people that had, like, a really big singer-songwriter album in 92.
Yeah, and had, like, one big hit, like, Tom's Diner.
Yeah, Suzanne Vega.
I saw her perform there.
Betty always plays there, the band that sings the L Word theme song.
Anyway, one thing I learned working at City Winery was that red wine is often served too hot at restaurants and white wine is served too cold. Because, like, the American consumer is stupid,
right.
And they're always like...
Red wine's supposed to be steamy boots, and...
Okay, there's that passage where he talks about, like, things that really annoy him that are about restaurants that, like, servers do, which was so fucking on the
money. Oh, well, he was extremely accurate. Okay, so I do think the best thing about he teaches his servers and is to be, like, you need to know when someone is, like, either having a business lunch or, like, an anniversary or just, like, needs to be left alone or, like, does want to be catered to. He also goes in that whole thing, which is so insane, of how he manages... a reservation, and he's like, if I know that, like, a publishing mogul is sitting at, like, table, like, 13, and then I see that, like, a financier is sitting at, like, table 27, I'm going to sit them together. And then it's like, and days later, yes, a deal was brokered, and they had investments.
So, I mean, he's the original Trump. He actually is the deal maker.
Yeah.
And he's making the deals happen in proximity. Okay, this passage where he talks about what... he doesn't want waiters to do. I cringe when a waiter asks, how is everything? That's an empty question that will get an empty response. Also, I can't stand the use of we to mean you, as in, how are we doing so far? I abhor the question, are you still working on the lamb? If the guest has been working on the lamb, it probably wasn't very tender or very good in the first place.
No, my parents are like obsessed with like roasting servers who ask if you're still working. Like, that was like their family joke, but they really like kind of...
Oh, they still make it?
They still make it. And I'm like, all right.
I mean, I mean,
yes.
Tea, though.
No,
like, tea
like,
served.
I remember being like 10 and they were like, are we still working? We're not working. We're eating.
What I find annoying about it, though, is it's just like, it like makes me feel like guilty for having not finished it.
Well, because it's like they're waiting and they're like, are you still like, you're still kind of plunging your way through this chicken here?
Yeah. And it's like, babe, I'm trying to enjoy myself. Oh, if a guest says thank you for something, the waiter should not answer no problem. Since when is it necessary to deny that delivering excellent service is a problem? A genuine you're welcome is always their appropriate response, which I also think is true. Because saying no problem is so, like, as if, like...
It was a problem.
Yeah, as if they were going to go out of their way or something. But I also feel like your welcome is somewhat, like, overly formal.
Yeah, I feel like you just say nothing.
Can say my pleasure, I think, is kind of nice. But then he talks about how you go to the Ritz-Carlton and everyone says my pleasure and it sounds like a cult.
Well, right, and that is what's great. And also then, like, when we went to... It's a real tour of our trips. When we went to Vegas and that, like, began our joke of saying...
Oh, you're going to want to go ahead. Had,
because anytime, like, we were like, oh, can we get towels? They would deliver towels Danny Meyer style to our door.
Right.
And then they would call a second later and be like, hello. How was your towel experience?
Right.
And you're just like, this is too much hospitality.
Yeah, actually,
you should know,
it's an invasion.
You should know when to step back.
And
but know when to push forward.
Well, because one thing that he said that really resonated, he says, service is the delivery of a product. Hospitality is how the delivery of that product makes someone feel. And so, sure, when the towels are delivered promptly, that can be nice. But the phone call, and then are you going to go ahead and enjoy the towels that you received? It's just, it's a lot. And I do have to kind of get through my day.
Okay, I felt, by the way, like reading this book and like taking all my scrawls of notes, I felt like so like a down and out businessman in like a worn
like suit, like reading this book,
like how like to death be, of a salesman.
Yeah, like how to be successful. And I'm taking furious notes, being like, the road to success is paved with mistakes. And I'm just like, no, let me just read this book and then I'll become like a rich hotelier. Well, so when I was, I would say ages 9 to 11, I really wanted to own a hotel. That was one of my big dreams. It was kind of, I think I would own a women's basketball team or play in a women's basketball team, then with that money...
Play to own.
And then I was thinking I would own a hotel. And I had this recurring fantasy. And it was usually just kind of like me walking into a hotel and then like me sitting at a desk. And I'm just like, oh, I just want to go to hotels.
So there wasn't really a lot of just like, not even like deed signing or just like, no. This is my hotel. More just like literally being in the hotel.
Yeah, but I mean, definitely I was briefcase and I was like in a suit and I'm walking in. And I was kind of being so like guns to like everyone who works there.
Is there like a busty hostess who's just like pushing a martini, being like, "Sir, here you are."
Yeah, I'm sure I had like a hot secretary.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then I sit back, and they're just like, "Mr. Murata, we have your 3 o'clock." And my parents were like, "Oh my god, amazing! You can go to like the Cornell like School of Hotels,
hotel management,
right? Which are
where our good friend McCall went,
right?" And then kind of, I was like,
I think that could still be in the cards for
no,
you.
No, I don't. I'm not shutting that up.
But you know what? I think your instinct to want to be a hotelier is...
I think I have great hospitality.
Yes. And I think that you want people to have fun. I feel the same way. You know? You want to... And that's what being a host is about. It's what, yes. You know, it's what hosting a comedy show is. It's what hosting a podcast is about. You want to bring people in and have them have a good time.
Exactly. He has something in there about it. It is kind of about being like a service top, basically. It's like you get your pleasure.
Yes.
Basically servicing.
Right.
Others.
Jeans stay on during sex. You are going down on someone else, and when they come, they're
done. I'm
in
my heavy denim.
Although, you know what? Danny Meyer's a service up, but now I'm actually questioning. Okay, I feel like in lesbian sex, giving oral is not necessarily bottom behavior.
No, that's the whole switch, because I feel like
actually receiving oral is more the bottom.
That's the bottom, because then you have to like admit like you have like a pussy.
Right, and like giving
so
oral.
So giving is more just like, fuck yeah. Like, yeah. I'm like service, I'm giving, like, I'm going to make my girl come.
But are there stud tops nowadays who would talk about getting head from a woman?
Yeah, but I think it's like...
You know,
you talk about it, but you're like, yeah, I got a blowjob.
Oh, like she sucked on your strap.
Yeah, my strap.
Okay.
But or just even receiving, just like someone eating you out, being like, yeah, like even I got head.
To receive an eat out.
Yeah.
Cool.
So a little brief kind of on that, because I know right in gay guy culture.
Right. If you are sucking a dick, you are not a top.
Isn't that crazy, these cultural rules
it's
we
so
build?
Right. Like, why does one thing have to be one way?
And this was something we could go, you know, probably late night eats at Union Square Cafe or Gramercy Tavern.
Right.
And just discuss it.
Right. And who says that a late night eat doesn't have to be elevated French bistro fare?
Right. Who says you can't have a gorgeous steak frites reinvented?
Who says that a restaurant at a museum just has to be a rote cafeteria for museum goers and not a high luxury dining experience?
Speaking of Tuesday night,
we went to
The Modern.
The two-star, I believe, Michelin restaurant.
Two-star Michelin.
Michelin restaurant in the MoMA. It was...
You've never been. I had never been.
It was absolutely fabulous.
It was so fucking fab.
We got drinks. I
also would say, let's talk about the service for a second. The
phenomenal.
Going in was phenomenal. It's like, it was so
the
professional.
The going in. Lily's stages of a meal. The going in.
Well, because he talks about, like, hospitality, like, it is a battlefield. The reservation is our first line of defense.
Yeah.
And it's like... There were no tables, and we were like, there was no seats at the bar, and we were like asking if we could have like a bar table, and she was being so classic restaurant, like literally, you know, she was just like paging through an iPad that was just blank and was just like, yeah,
Maybe we can squeeze you in. It's going to be 45 minutes.
And then, it is about managing expectations.
Right, because you don't want to promise something or turn someone off.
Right, and you don't want to, like, overbook and, like, you know, kill the waiters and kill the kitchen. But then she was like, do you mind, like, all squeezing around this table? And it was, like, this absolutely massive banquet that could have fit, like, 5 more people. And she was like, is this okay? And we're just like, we'll suffer.
Right, we'll suffer. It's just so Midtown, and I feel like people in Midtown are like, I need, like, a wide, wide banquet to, like, sit my ass down on.
The spatial relations in Midtown.
And we're accustomed to kind of generous. 5 leaves.
Oh, yeah.
5 leaves.
We've been cramming in our us millennials. We'll fit like sardines.
But so I would say it was perfect service. You know, it was, they laughed at some of our jokes.
When I was coughing, a waiter came within like 15 seconds with like a jug of water, like seeing that I was coughing and needed water. Right. It was...
eyes open.
Yes.
And we ordered quite randomly, I'll say.
Yeah, we got scallops and fries.
Dessert first. Oh, right. This was because our friend was being weird. But they didn't bat an eye. And they're like...
The same friend who, ironically, was in that story I told earlier about wanting to sit at a different table at Chili's.
And you have to be ready for anything. When someone says, hey, I want to get ice cream and then I want scallops and fries.
You don't bat an eyelash. You bring it out as it comes if that's what the diners need.
Also, some woman from Mrs. Maisel was there.
Okay, so follow up to that story. So that actress who was Mrs. Swan or Miss Swan on Mad TV is now in Miss Maisel.
Yep.
Was a couple seats down from us at the Modern. And we look over, we're like, oh my God, that's that woman from Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. Cut to the next day.
Also, she was being so fab of having 2 phones and a whiskey. My favorite meal.
Do you think it was a Santori, a Japanese?
I bet
whiskey?
It was Japanese, definitely. Like, all
she
their,
was screaming Santori.
All their vibes. Cocktails were a blend of a Japanese whiskey and an Australian whiskey. And
it's just like, and these whiskeys need to live together. Like,
yeah, they have to be combined.
Plays well
and
with
everything
others.
Was like, reserve cocktails, 20. Batch reserve, 30.
Batch reclaimed reserve, 35. So I was at Danny Meyer's Union Square Cafe the next day. I pull up to the bar. I put Setting the Table, this book we're reading, on the bar. I sit down. The bartender looks at me and goes, oh, what's that book? And I like smiling and I'm just like, oh, it's about the restaurant industry. It's pretty good. Then the guy next to me, this like old middle-aged guy on like 7 iPads, turned to goes, I helped him write it.
Stop. That-
okay. Then like 10 minutes later, these like 2 fabulous chicas come in and are having like this.
Wait,
like,
you're sitting at the bar?
I'm sitting at the bar.
Okay, classic.
Okay.
Oh,
here's another tip. Always sit at the bar.
Always sit at the bar because you become friends with the bartender. They're more likely to like probably give you some free stuff.
They give you free shit and they're like chit-chat.
Or like bigger pours. Become friends.
So then these 2 fabulous chicas come in. They're like laughing, da da da. Within 30 seconds, they're talking about Danny Meyer's book. And they're just like, oh no. And he says it in the book. The bartender's over there with these 2 chicas. He turns to me, smiles. I raise my book cover up and show it to him. And like the chica goes, she goes, shut up. You just said the name of the book and it appeared. Quick, say $1 million.
No. How old were they?
They were just like 40. Like,
oh my God.
2 fab, like 42. One was with like the most crimped hair. Like,
these are the girls,
no,
the women,
like,
sorry.
You go into a Danny Meyer restaurant, it is 2002.
Right, and, like, and you're back in the rom-com. And they have like probably dished on so many dates there.
No, they were like...
I mean, it is also Sex and the City because he talks about how the Sex and the City, Sex and the City.
Sex and the City,
I
Sex
do
and
need
the
those
City,
voice
Sex
lessons.
And the City. Yes, absolutely.
Came on their bus tour to EMP.
11 Madison Park.
Yeah.
One of the finest restaurants in the world.
Absolutely.
So those speakers are... Then there's a guy on his laptop to the right of me who is alternately like reading scripts and then checking his AOL mail. This was yesterday.
You fully did a time jump.
It's a time jump to 02. And I'm just like, someone's checking their AOL mail at this like bar at 2 where we're all having like this wine lunch. So I've like already talked to the bartender about this podcast and put a wine here just to sort of be upfront about my motives.
No, I mean, because he was like,
because I didn't want him to think I was some weird spy or like that I was like a cop hired by Danny Meyer or like whatever.
Yeah, because I was like, that is so like wearing the band's t-shirt to the band when said that you were bringing the book like there and you're being so front and center. And I was like, either they're gonna love it or be like so sketched.
They're gonna love it because everyone there is a full Danny Meyer fan,
right?
So this guy's listening to me say this, and he was telling me about his career as writer. And he's like, oh, okay. So like, I'm actually, I'm a writer for Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. And I was just like, wait, what? And he was like, we actually had like the Maisel premiere at MoMA. And I was like, oh, like the Maisel brothers have a new movie? Because I thought, I just like remembered you like...
Working for the Maisels.
Working for the Maisels. And so like, I know that they exist. And he was like, no, the Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. And I was like, oh, what? That's why we saw the Maisel star dining alone at the Modern.
I can't believe, because I'm sure there was some other drinks. Do you think she like ditched it and was just like, I need to like be alone at the Modern?
Which is so fabulous of her to just be like, I'm sorry, I just like can't be around all these people. I'm just going to go next
door. And like get my Santori.
And have my Santori and have my like moment to decompress.
After this.
Or maybe it was like before the panel. She was just like, oh, she's one of those people who's like, I hate to watch my own material.
I can't be
in the theater when it's screening.
Because it was like 7 or something. It probably was like, I hate watching myself. Because of course there's Parker. So like, oh, I think I've only seen one episode of Sex in the City.
Anyway, it was just like, wow, Danny Meyer owns New York. Like, people are going to the Modern one night and then going to Union Square Cafe the next day.
I go for his hospitality. And I feel like the whole thing about Union Square Cafe is him building repeat customers. People who go to Union Square Cafe people who go every week.
Everyone there was a regular. Then another guy comes in and the bartender turns to me. He's like, oh, hey, Nick, like, you take sparkling, right? And he's like, of course. And then he's like, and he just like knows his water
the memory
order.
And the water. I feel like I'm really not like...
A regular anywhere.
A regular anywhere, and it makes me...
Sad boots.
Sad.
Yeah.
Like, I've, like, the bar probably I've been to, like, most is probably just, like, Julia's.
They don't, like, recognize you. I mean, I would say I'm a regular at Asian Aroma, where I host my comedy show.
Well, that doesn't count.
Certainly
not. You're not, like, going there just for, like, the spaghetti oil. What?
No, I'm not going for the pasta with oil. But if I ever go there when I'm not... I mean, I get that's different. That's a venue I have a relationship with.
Yeah, it's very different.
Yeah.
Like, I'm also a regular at Honey's, I guess.
Yeah.
Where I perform and clean and drink.
But I don't really get any free drinks at Honey's, really.
We used to.
Yeah.
Segment vibes.
How does she live?
How does she eat?
What does she wear? Okay.
So I kind of cheated just to top this off.
Okay. What, you read like an architectural
I read like an NYT like inside of like Danny Meyer's
Sunday
home.
Sunday was Danny. Okay. Can I guess?
Yeah. So let's first off, how does he live?
Right. I'm guessing like deep leather couch from Restoration Hardware.
It's very Restoration Hardware, but it's not leather. It was all about like wine-colored corduroy couches. It's just tons of big couches. It was like, you're going to need to like struggle for a seat.
Okay.
For, like between just, oh wait, die. They have a dog that's an Italian truffle sniffing dog.
What the
yes,
fuck?
We need.
Wait, it's literally just like a pig, but it's a dog.
Yeah. I wish my cat could sniff truffles.
That's insane. I'm picturing just a lot of like warm fabric.
Yeah, warm fabric. So it's like, I think
it's
in the,
big and lush
yeah,
and cozy.
Huge, big.
It's almost like when you go to someone's like estate in the south of France and it's like kind of like old fashioned-y, but like modern.
The estate I stayed at in the south of France
was just like very old fashioned.
No,
only.
And, well, I guess it actually was kind of a mix. It was kind of 80s and like big tile and like
oh,
big
that's
sinkable
like so Airbnb,
couches.
Though. I'm talking like sink worthy couches. Also, I'm picturing he has a double farm sink and like hanging copper pots, so Julia Child style.
That, but it's also just like a lot of big bookcases. It's a duplex in Gramercy. It's basically obviously just like a ton of like corduroy huge couches.
Is there like a ladder, rolling ladder?
Yes, rolling ladder. Also, so Danny Meyer always talks about how he's obsessed with early Americana antiques.
Mm. And he's so American Pickers. And right. He's getting a massive propeller.
Which is like the straight way to like design is like you can be obsessed, but it is so propeller and like barn door and like... a desk from Massachusetts in 1623.
You know, they want to hearken back to a time when things were a little simpler.
A little simpler.
Yeah, when everyone knew their place, shall we say.
Okay, what does he wear? I mean, he's so just like slim,
the most, like,
navy blazer.
But he's so like, I have a tailor that I've had for 30
years. Yeah, it's like the most boring suit.
I go to
but
the tailoring district to get my clothes tailored.
Like,
but
there's an alternate.
Like, I feel like he has like a Brioni suit or like a Laura Piana.
Definitely Brioni suits.
Yeah.
And it's Armani. It's just like classic suits, tailored.
But he's also very like I get my shoes in Italy.
My shirts in London.
I get my shirts in London. I get my ties in France.
And I bet he has like a really good pair of Levi's.
For like Sundays only.
Yes, Sundays only. And that's when like he walks the truffle dog.
When I go find a new pit spot, a new pit joint.
That, yeah, he's like, we grab some beers and watch the Cardinals and just riff on jazz, antiques, and barbecue.
He doesn't seem like he ever is really relaxed though. And that's another gay panic thing. Like, I feel like he's never.
No, but I also bet he doesn't sleep that much.
Yeah, I mean, he's very like Illuminati 4 hours a night.
Yes. What does he eat?
Honey.
Well, this is interesting because what doesn't he eat?
Yeah,
like,
what doesn't he eat?
He, yes, is going on like constant trips and is tasting everything and is going to every bistro and is always like perfecting his restaurants. But I also feel like he's like still like so weirdly like celeb and is just like random parfait, like juice in the morning. And then like,
what do you think a parfait is?
Like a parfait is like granola and yogurt.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. I guess I think it's like, for you, a parfait is like so dessert, though.
Not like this huge banana truffle.
Right, like, that's okay. Like,
I'm just thinking more like it's some like Icelandic yogurt with blueberries. And then like his wife is like, Danny, you should eat breakfast. And he's like, I don't eat breakfast.
Or he's being so, do you think that he's never been so like keto or whatever? That's, like, so anathema to just, like, loving food.
No, but I mean, he's, like, a runner. Like, he's so treadmill.
He's treadmill.
He's not run.
He's so rom-com. Like,
yeah.
He's on the phone, on the treadmill.
On the treadmill, on the Bluetooth. And then is like, whew, grabs the towel.
Yeah.
And then his wife is like, put on a new shirt.
Yeah. Oh, don't kiss me with those lips.
Wear the blue one with the blue tie.
She keeps me honest. He's always just, he's so saying that people are like a good judge of character.
Oh, he's like, you know that person in your family?
Who's a great judge of character.
Who can go on jury duty and tell if someone's innocent in a second.
And I'm like, whom's the fuck?
Okay, I have a theory that people who always claim that they're a good judge of character are actually the worst judges.
Like racist.
Yeah, like psychos. They're like, I can fucking tell when someone's a snake.
Right.
And you're like,
That's actually very your ex.
Well, that's what I'm talking about.
Immediately refers to people as being cockeyed.
She was always like, I knew she was a fucking snake. And then like 6 months later, she'd be like, Stephanie's actually really cool.
Yeah.
But that's that restaurant energy.
No,
you're always judging. You're always
judging because it's a fucking go, go, go world. And you're under a ton of stress. And everyone's being so yes, chef.
Right.
Sorry, I just like banged way too hard. Who are you in the book?
I think I'm Danny Meyer's a child.
Oh, and sneaking prosciutto at night?
Yeah, because, I once, like, snuck out to a deli because I don't think I was, like, allowed yet to leave the house without supervision. I remember getting a sub and hiding it under my bed because I, like, didn't want, like, my parents to know.
They didn't want you to know that you'd snuck out.
Yeah.
And what you did when you snuck out of the house was
just, like, get a big sub. And it's like, I don't know if they'd be so mad. That was just like weird sub energy.
And it was just like this oil seeping out of the sub under your bed.
Yeah, I think
onto
it was
the
like
carpet.
A bologna, cheese, pickles, something going on.
Light mayo, extra salt,
red wine vinegar.
Not you remembering this order.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember walking into a movie theater once and you pulled a McDonald's cheeseburger out of your pocket. So, old habits.
Also, one time, remember we brought subs into a movie theater and the guy was like, you can't bring food into a movie theater. We're like, come on, we're not going to eat these subs in the movie theater.
I was already in.
Okay.
And he was like, I guess you're right. Like, no one would eat a 12-inch sub in a theater. And then we proceeded to devour those. That was during Ocean's 8.
Yeah. And I was absolutely, we were all covered.
And the lights came on and we're covered in balsamic.
My scent, balsamic.
Who am I in the book?
You're also
Danny Meyer, just like constantly going on vacation with my parents and like
having this gay panic and just being like, a restaurant needs to be like expensive.
I could like also see myself as just like one of his like many friends that he's like, he was a really good guy, really good pit master, and he knew his way around a vineyard.
or are we both all the people who die of AIDS in 89?
Sad.
That was cool that he did a shout out. No, it was his cool AIDS that he was being very shout out. He was just like, we did lose a lot. And, you know, and ultimately, our third, like, general manager of that restaurant.
Right, like, also, Michael something.
Like, Mike Romano, like, then also died, like, succumbed to the AIDS virus in 1989. Like, and it was too bad that we kept losing people. But I focused on my next restaurant.
Right, and that's when I got the idea for Tabla. Right. Maybe I'm his cousin later in life who opened Blue Standard, the jazz club.
Oh, had that double. You were like, you had a jazz club that was struggling.
That was struggling, and someone helped me out and was like, what if I buy you out and add a restaurant to it? And I'm like, sounds good to me.
I see that.
Wow. So what a book.
What an incredible journey.
I triple recommend if you like food, hospitality.
If you're into restaurants, if you're into New York City, if you're into the rom-com, if you like to duck in.
If you like to duck in, or if you like are such a business person and like want to learn how to like literally like treat people.
Yeah, no, for our business listeners.
I know all the business heads out there.
This is actually a very helpful book. Much better than some of those fucking cash grab
rich dad, poor
CEO
dad
books that they throw. I mean, you know, fucking Jack Welch or whatever. Some asshole like writes some book. Because all like business books are usually honestly pretty worthless. And they're just like.
And they're so boring and impersonal.
Yeah. This is like real. And these lessons about HubSpot are absolutely vital.
I mean, interesting. He says he was like, I absolutely like was not going to be like such a Trump and do The Apprentice or like do an Apprentice style show.
And literally, and I've never, like, when I was at USC yesterday, like he gave me all this wine to try. I was like, I'm kind of thinking like this or this or this. He was like, let's try all three. He gave me a generous pour of three different wines. He was like, finish them all. I don't want to let wine go to waste. It's like, yes. Like, and he's saying he loves wine. It's like, it's a shared experience.
When you give people more, it's like, you're not going to lose money because, like, you're getting way free stuff because they're definitely just going to come back.
Right. You're getting repeat customers. That's what it's about. Don't try and swindle people the first time. Try and, like, be extra generous so that they'll come back.
And you're just being like, this one, actually, you're going to love and is really fun. And that's the bottle that's, like, 62.
And, like, when I said to the guy yesterday, I have this new thing where I say that I want a wine that tastes like it's just been on a hike. Like, that I want it to be wiry and muscly and a little
okay,
sweaty.
Okay, that's very this review of upstate restaurant Lil Deb's wine program.
What? All the wines are just
well,
like,
they say that, like, they don't like when they're rough, at. Yeah, they are always like, oh, like, what's your favorite, like, body of water to swim in? And, like, that's how they choose the wine.
What's your favorite body of water to swim in?
The ocean.
You're a natural lady. You
big,
like
salty.
And you like getting tossed around by a big wave.
But I love ocean. I love getting, like, fucked by a wave. But
that's the only time you're bottom.
It's true. When I'm in the ocean.
You want the ocean.
I want the ocean in an ideal world. I want the ocean and then finish the night off in the pool.
You are can submerged all day. Yeah,
I like to stay wet. Wait, okay, just last thing. Which Danny Meyer restaurant are you?
Well, I'd like to think I'm the modern. Absolute luxury, art, culture, midtown, banquettes. But maybe I am more of a USC
Kate
Hudson.
I think you're USC, yeah. You're Kate Hudson. It's like, you're more like gorgeous Caesar salad. You're not, you know, yes, you're luxurious, but you're not all the time, like, crazy $30, like, Japanese whiskey.
You know what I think you are, and this is actually going to come as a surprise, but not?
What?
Gramercy Tavern.
Oh, because I'm, like, retro?
Yeah. And you're, like, you do have, like, a big propeller in your apartment. And you have so many, like, weird, like, old little, like, Pep Boys, like, statues and mugs and old signs.
And thank you so much for saying I'm Gramercy Tavern and not Blue Smoke, because I'm not a fucking theme park.
No, and you're...
I'm just, like, real antiques.
And you're not at JFK that often.
No. I'm more LaGuardia. All right.
Next week, we will be reading... DJ Steve Aoki.
And his book, The Color of Noise.
It's actually Blue, The Color of Noise.
Oh, so I was correct the first time.
Well, I mean,
I thought I messed up.
No. It's just called Blue, The Color of Noise. I do kind of think it maybe just should have been called either Blue or The Color of Noise.
Yeah.
That would have been a stronger.
A little more blue is the warmest color. But yeah. We're going to get
into all that on yes. next episode.
We'll save their scintillating title critique until next week. Until then, ladies, keep on dancing. Well, thanks for another amazing episode, Lily. It's always a pleasure to talk book with you.
Mm-mm-mm. You talk such a good book. And we're going to do it next week when we... read Steve Aoki's memoir.
Which we just discussed. but seriously, you guys, thank you so much. And I am just going to put out a little ask there. We know we've been bullying you to write reviews and stuff, but here's the deal. And I don't want to sound like, you know, a Pollyanna or the opposite of a Pollyanna. Someone who's...
Anna Polly,
who's sort of ringing the alarm bells and being an alarmist. But like, we are actually on the verge of being canceled. And if you do not tell your friends about us, and if you do not spread the word, and if you do not print out flyers and post them to telephone poles in your neighborhood,
we're just going to be another podcast left in the mother chomping dust.
Do you want it to see the desiccated carcass of CBC on the desert
side of the road? And by the way,
of the audio
industry,
the reviews
that are coming in.
Oh no, they're phenomenal.
Amazing.
Thank you so much.
Great work.
And honestly, like, our heart goes out to you from the 9 a.m. club to the 7 a.m. club, like from every single club kid out there in the club kid universe. Thank you. Thank you so much. But like, it is do or die. And like, you need to get out there and you need to spread the word. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, and also, like, we'll see you next week. Best.
Best?
Yeah, good fun.
Celebrity Book Club is presented by the amazing Chef Prologue Projects and Sous Chef Headgum. The show is produced by sommelier Meg Murnane with editorial support from one of my favorite purveyors of amazing provisions, Leon Nafalk and Andrew Parsons and Madeline Kaplan. Our production manager is Persia Verlin. Her produce is... it's shocking, honestly. Engineering by Ferris Munchie. He runs this little restaurant. They make the most amazing seafood. Nothing is cooked. Nothing is cooked. It's that fresh. Original theme song by Stephen Phillips Horst, who is also one of the most cutthroat restaurant critics in the nation. Artwork by Teddy Blanks at Chips NY. This guy makes a mean Manhattan. All right, please follow us on Twitter at CBC The Pod. Subscribe on your favorite podcast app. Leave us a review. And don't forget to tell your friends about us.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia. And I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.